Ring the bell. We've done it again. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates to 4.875 fixed. Lower your monthly payment, get cash out, pay off credit cards, and best of all, make no mortgage payments for 2 months. Lock in this incredible 4.875 rate and get your cash in as little as 14 days. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
5.81 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the hour. We'll get back to the Rockets as well between now and 7:30. Rafael Stone met with the media yesterday. Just to sum it all up, I would not expect big fireworks on the trade market this offseason with the Rockets based on what he was saying yesterday. What he was saying yesterday may not be the whole truth and nothing but the truth, but he said to bet on continuity. It was his inside
bet on continuity, and there's one part we didn't play where he got a little bit testy. Somebody had asked a question about some of the advanced stats that show that Jalen Green wasn't as effective as he might look. And Rafael Stone just basically said, like, listen, we've got our stats too. He's fine.
Yep.
Is that fair?
I've got that audio lined up for 7:17, so we'll do that. We'll hit that in the next segment. He did. He got a little chippy with that one. But the chart is disturbing that person was talking about to look at. It basically said that all the guys in the rotation for the Rockets are better without Jalen Green on the floor than they are with Jalen Green on the floor, to sum it up. So we'll get to that. As far as NFL news goes, again, Nick Caserio joins us bottom of the hour. This Pickens trade was a nice little injection for non-Texans news, I suppose. George Pickens on his way to the Dallas Cowboys. Trade expected to include a third-round pick and other pick swaps. I'm reading that off the TV screen here in the studio. Adam Schefter making this report. Just as we were going on the air today, reported that this trade was in the works. So Pickens, so we do, Seth, in this barren wasteland of post-draft lack of news, we get a little bit of news today.
Right. Yep. And that's there's like about 9 different facets to all of that, especially because it involves Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and David Mulligetta, who represents both Micah Parsons and George Pickens. Probably lots of drama to ensue over the next few months with that.
Yep. So if there's any more details breaking on that, we'll keep you guys up to speed on that. So my question is, what can sustain us here over these dog days of now until training camp?
I know the biggest difference, probably, Sean, between you and Nick Caserio in terms of what you guys like and dislike. You guys both love wrestling.
Yeah.
You love the schedule release.
I love it. It's one of my favorites.
Nick Caserio,
it's a week from today. Yeah.
Gives it meh in all caps, bold.
Does he ever? Yeah.
Comic Sans.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He is not. He's not into the schedule release. So I would just say, don't waste a question on the schedule release.
No, I definitely. unless I just ask about his total disdain for it. But no. Yeah.
But that is, I'm going to be honest with you, I used to also be like Nick and be like, May 14th is coming up, and it started to rub off on me about your love for the schedule release. I'm starting to get into it too.
It helps when you have a good team that you're rooting for. You know what I mean? The Texans are a good team. So you're looking at, like, what are the primetime games? Are they going to get one of these international games? I mean, I think the audience that listens hardcore knows, Amy and I travel during the bye week every year. So we, to a different NFL stadium, that's Amy and I look forward to it. Cause, like, okay, what's the bye week? What are the games? What are the stadiums we can go to? I love the schedule release.
Are the Texans still in the mix for the Brazil game?
I think, like, technically they are, but the rumor is that it's going to be the Chiefs. That's the rumor, which surprises me because that's a division game. I was surprised that they would take a division game and put it in a venue that, is not
Surprises me too, because there's such there's been so much violence around the Chiefs in football that I don't know if Sao Paulo would welcome that into their fair city. I don't know any of these problems that Kansas City brings with it.
That's true. I guess technically it could still happen because the Texans are the Chargers are one of their road opponents this year. This is a home game for the Chargers. This Brazil game is what's.
I'm
going to
keep brushing up on my Portuguese. The only issue that I have with the schedule release was the fact that on night one of the draft, they delayed the announcing of the Bears pick by a good 2 minutes by making a huge production of announcing when they were going to announce the schedule release. They announced the date that they were going to
release
the schedule release. That bothered me.
Which is a total 180. They used to not, they literally like a day before they go, hey, the schedule release is tomorrow.
Oh yeah. It was a BTW.
You're right. They can probably reel it back in and just announce the date and not have to send two people out to the podium to waste 5 minutes of our time. But I'm excited about the schedule release. So there's that. May 20th and 21st is the next round of league meetings. With our possible tush push ban coming up, the rumor is that thing is going to get banned in some way, shape, or form.
Right, and it's a matter of to what degree.
Does that move the needle for you?
The reason the tush push is possible is because they changed the rule back early this century about pushing offensive players. One offensive player couldn't push the ball carrier to help him out or assist, but he became too hard to officiate, so they just allowed it, and then it took about a decade for people like, oh, wait a second, we should start utilizing this. It seems like the Eagles have done it very, very effectively. I feel like I don't have a lot of skin in the game in this, and I don't care one way or the other than that the Texans play the Bills quite a bit, and the Bills are one of the best teams at it.
Yeah.
I'm in the line with, I think, kind of with what D'Amico had said, which is some teams are really good at it, figure out a way to stop them.
Yeah.
And the Bills, the Chiefs figured out a way to stop the Bills in the conference championship game.
The solution sounds like it's going to be, if indeed it gets banned, is just to ban what you're talking about, Seth, which is pushing any ball carrier. It doesn't matter if it's in a third and short or down at the goal line. It can be second and 12 at midfield, and a wide receiver catches it in the flat. You can't push that guy.
I'll be honest with you. I'm torn on this because as a defensive player, I'm kind of biased towards, all right, well, it's bogus that the offense is getting this extra advantage. As just purely as a spectator, I kind of like the rolling rugby ruck of these guys. They just keep. But again, from the defensive perspective, right, guys are going to get suspended a game if they hit somebody after the whistle or anything. So guys are stood up. Classically, it looks like something that's going to be blown dead, but the play keeps going.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's become an unfair advantage, not with the tush push, but when it happens elsewhere on the field, like down at the goal line or over a first down marker or what have you.
All right, things that can sustain us here during the barren wasteland between the draft and training camp. Does the Aaron Rodgers to Pittsburgh news move your needle at all right now?
No, but the George Pickens to the Cowboys does affect the needleage of whether Aaron Rodgers decides to go play football again. Just George Pickens fell. I could do some nice things with him.
Not anymore.
And, no more.
Not unless you sign with the Cowboys and then have Dak Prescott whacked. They still have DK Metcalf, but I'm kind of just... And I was this way before, but like Aaron Rodgers, just, I know he said he's got family issues he's working through and things like that.
It is. No, it's a classic. This is with no, this is, take the name out of it, take anything else. It's that, you know who else has issues in their family in the offseason and what have you?
Yeah.
Lots and lots of really good 28-year-old quarterbacks who also want to win and put it like it's one of the most important things in their life, and they figure out a way to handle the family stuff and also go to OTAs and everything. That's where, whether it's Aaron Rodgers or anybody else, same way with Tom Brady. You know, Tom Brady in his final season, he had some big family stuff going on, and he was not himself as a 42-year-old guy.
Yep.
28-year-old Tom Brady, he had a split up too with the mother of his child. He just kept on rolling.
Which of these, we're going through the potential news this offseason that can move the needle and keep us sustained. Which of these three contract extension situations is the most interesting to you? Brock Purdy, Micah Parsons, which I think in a way just got more interesting this morning, and then Trey Hendrickson in Cincinnati.
Micah Parsons is the most interesting to me because Jerry Jones is going to keep it interesting. He just has this long established record of kicking the can down the road and not making a decision until he either trades a player like DeMarcus Ware, or, and this is a different situation because DeMarcus Ware was getting older, makes Micah Parsons the highest paid like non-quarterback in the NFL,
yeah,
or something like that. So Jerry Jones will make it interesting. Brock Purdy, I feel like some deal's going to get done, and it's going to be something kind of
not earth-shattering,
but yeah, whatever. Yeah,
in the neighborhood. Yeah.
Trey Hendrickson has turned me into a grumpy old man. Listen, when you're a rookie and you're on your rookie deal and you don't really have any hand in negotiating the contract or anything, I don't care. Like, yeah, go ahead, hold out, agitate, whatever. Because you didn't really. When you go somewhere as a free agent and you sign the deal. And okay, great. You either play it out and they give you a new deal, or, you know, maybe you play really well as he has done, and maybe they give you a new deal before you hit free agency. You signed a deal with the Bengals. You know better.
Yeah,
you were an adult signing a free agency deal with the Bengals,
yeah,
and now you're expecting that somehow that you deserve an extension before, and that's on you, bro.
Yeah.
You know, look, get screwed as a rookie, shame on the NFL. Get screwed as a free agent who signed with the Bengals. That's on you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep. That's a good point. That's a really good point. All right. Payne and Pendergast. Someone's saying.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And you guys will definitely have time this summer to talk about the monumental collapse of the Houston Astros. Yeah, these June, July, and August months, if they don't start hitting a little bit coming up here, it's gonna be
interesting. Yeah, let's start playing the celebration song every time they score more than 3 runs.
Okay.
Even if they lose.
I like that.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
Watchable baseball.
Watchable is the exact word I was just gonna use.
Because even the pitching, which has been great, even they are contributing to how boring this team is watching, because the Astros have the best whiff in the league.
Yep.
So they're just not putting guys, they're not even putting guys on base to keep us entertained.
There's nothing entertaining. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What you think about Jalen Green definitely is not what the audience, most of you, think about Jalen Green. It's definitely not what the Rockets think about Jalen Green. And we've got the audio from Raphael Stone to prove it coming up next. Nick Caserio, bottom of the hour. Stay there. Okay, so there was a graphic floating around the internet yesterday in the aftermath of the Rockets getting knocked out in 7 games by the Warriors. And it was a graphic that showed a net rating on and off the floor splits featuring Jalen Green. So when Jalen Green's on the floor with this guy, here's what this guy's net rating is. When Jalen Green's not on the floor with, say, Alperen Şengün, here's what Şengün's net rating is, that kind of thing. Just, you know, and it is probably slightly flawed because this is just two guys out of five that are on the floor. But when something is this drastically skewed one way, it doesn't feel like it's nothing. So this chart, if you can envision this, basically the message was that Alperen Şengün, Fred VanVleet, Amen Thompson, Dylan Brooks, Steven Adams, Jabari Smith, and Tari Eason are all more productive players, some significantly so, with Jalen Green off of the floor than with Jalen Green on the floor. This is perfect visual fuel for people that are hell-bent on getting Jalen Green up and out of Houston.
Right.
You're trying to create a narrative here, you know?
Yeah, and I always get a little bit nervous about those because obviously the stat nerds and everything, the genuine stat nerds are very good at breaking this stuff down, and yet there's a level of complexity that, the times that Jalen Green isn't on the floor, is it also, you know, when you're playing against the backups and rotational players or games where he's just not playing at all and guys are featured more heavily? Yeah. So without having like a hardcore, so whatever, a lot of people are using it as evidence that, man, Jalen Green is actually the opposite of a guy who makes guys better around him.
Yeah.
The guys are actually much better without him.
That's correct. Yeah. Like the people who want Jalen Green gone would be standing outside Toyota Center waving a poster of this bar graph that Seth and I are describing. This chart actually got brought up yesterday in the Raphael Stone, Ime Udoka postseason exit press conference, and Raphael Stone is not buying into that chart.
That's a really flawed question. So, like, we have there's great data that we have and we use, Ime would know. One of my favorite things, and I tell him when we have a new. When we have new coaches join, one of my favorite things to tell them is I can make data say whatever I want it to say. I think we heavily use it, but we're very careful to try and really parse it out. And I would say that some of our very best lineups include him. And so that piece by itself, I just think that's just not correct.
It is, it's tough too. I'm not discounting saying that chart might be is wrong or anything like that. It's just that I think there's sometimes you see this in baseball a lot. Like people are super analytical and everything will start really diving into the numbers, but they'll still be going by lefties versus righties and what have you. Where the teams that are really advanced, like their analytics that they're using are way more individualized and advanced, to where they're looking at the actual shape of the pitches and the actual splits and everything. And it's anything that looks super convincing in analytics that's available to the masses, you got to always just take it with a grain of salt. And there's times when Jalen Green is out there, and because when he's ball dominant and successful, other guys' net ratings might not be as good, whatever. I think suffice it to say that the Rockets have a different feeling about Jalen Green, and whether it's based on analytics or anything else, than probably the public at large does right now. Now, I also think, though, that the Rockets might not be looking at Jalen Green as a guy who's a future superstar. And as long as you can accept that, all right, it's very, very, very much in the cards that Jalen Green is not going to develop into the superstar and the savior that everybody wanted, it doesn't mean he's a bad basketball player.
No.
And it doesn't mean that he can't be part, an integral part of a really good basketball team. He still does have to keep making improvements, though.
Yeah, the most interesting one on the chart, I'm going to give a shred of credibility to the chart, at least.
That it's flawed. Yeah, I'm not trying to discredit it.
No. What I'm about to say here is that the Şengün being the one who's got the longest bar graph of positivity without Jalen on the floor is interesting to me, just because I've always thought that they're a bit of a clunky fit with each other as your two offensive guys. Like, Jalen's not a sniper from outside. Şengün's a back it down in the post guy who's a really good passer out of the post, you know, and I Jalen is a guy who's probably better attacking the rim than he is, you know, settling for step back jumpers and things like that. And Şengün, while he's a guy who can play on the perimeter because he's a really good passer and he sees the floor, got an okay shot. There is that element of, especially in the half court, that things are a little gunked up for Jalen to be Jalen in the half court. So that thing, that part is at least interesting to me, but people are weighing in.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, swift rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
You know, guys, we watched Jalen play. They don't win 52 games without him. He had a good year and a horrible playoffs. That's all fair. That's all fair. But you also need to acknowledge, Texter, that playoff basketball is very different than the 82-game grind of the regular season.
Right. No, and that's where I think people immediately after the Game 7, I think everybody is heated as hell and throwing all kinds of wild statements out. I think that after everything settles down, it's like, yeah, I can't sit here and look at a chart and think that somehow Jalen Green wasn't a good basketball player year in the regular season.
No.
It doesn't jibe with common sense and what your eyeballs say. So there's a bit of skepticism for me to look at a color coded chart and say, oh, yep, look at that, he's trash, he's no good at all.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, and we got to hit a break here because Nick Caserio is joining us bottom of the hour. If they were playing any of the other 4 or 5 teams they could have played in the first round, we might be singing a different tune. Golden State has his number. You know, like Golden State has figured out the Jalen Green thing. So there's that, too. That was a bad opponent for him. Now, you got to beat Golden State at some point if you're going to get through things, but we'll see. All right, Nick Caserio, Texans GM. This is our first chance to get to talk to him post-draft. So we've got some follow-up questions to the draft. The rookies get into town. They may be here already, but they start practicing on Friday of this week. A whole lot to get to. Off-season chat with Texans Executive Vice President and GM Nick Caserio is next. All right, there it is, 7:30 on a Wednesday. DX playing. It is the walkout music of our guest at this time, joins us fairly frequently throughout the year, and we always enjoy chatting, especially right after the draft and right before the rookies get here. Always good to catch up with Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager Nick Caserio. Nick, good morning. How are you?
Morning, fellas. Thanks for having us. Congratulations to my good friend Triple H on his induction.
Yeah.
On the heels of his music there. That's great.
I don't know if you got to see his speech because it was happening, you know, during draft season there, and it took an hour and 10 minutes. I don't know if you get an hour and 10 minutes to do extracurricular stuff like that.
I saw him walk out and spray the water everywhere, so yeah. It was pretty much on brand. So it's about the extent of it. So it'll be an off-season study. I'll get to it eventually.
There you go. Yeah, I'll send you all the links to all the YouTubes and everything. You'll be good. You'll be good to go. How you feeling? How are we feeling post-draft and pre the rookies getting here? Are they in town yet, the rookies?
They'll be on their way, I want to say, tomorrow at some point. So they'll travel tomorrow, be here Friday, Saturday. Sunday will probably be pretty light, and then they'll kind of transition with the rest of the team here on Monday as we work through phase two. So more than anything, these couple days, these upcoming, will be more of an introduction, just kind of give them a foundation, just kind of focus on the players that we have, our drafted players, undrafted players. Don't really have too many like tryout type players, so just try to focus on our players, kind of get them up to speed. So excited to get them in the building, excited to get started. Some of these players have been on their own working. I think there was a clip or a picture of like Mertz, Jackson, and Noel were working out together because they're all from Kansas City. They all had helmets on. It looked like they had like Hutch helmets on. They didn't have any pads, so it was like when they were growing up when you put those oversized helmets on. But they're working. They've had contact with the coaches. They've had Zoom, so they're just trying to get up to speed relative to the information from a football standpoint. So excited to get him in the building, excited to get started.
Yeah, does this feel like a rookie class? You guys, you and D'Amico make, you know, such a prominent thing that the culture in there, the love of football, all those things. Does this feel like a rookie class to you that's going to fit right in, like hand in glove with the guys you've got in the building already? Or is that something that you need to kind of ascertain over time here?
Yeah, we'll have a better sense when they walk in the building, but we feel the worker ethic mindset, their competitive drive, their competitive nature, they possess the qualities that we covet in players. I think all teams really kind of covet some of those qualities in players. So I think the focus is on football, is trying to improve as a football player, understanding like they have to come in and earn their opportunity and with their work and with their effort. So come in, forget about everything else, and just go to work, which is what a lot of these players have done over the course of their career. So we're not going to ask them to do anything that they haven't done or not accustomed to doing, but they just have to understand what it means to do it within the context of our building and our football team, understanding that we feel we're going to have a competitive team, so they're going to have to earn their opportunity with their performance, and that comes with what they do on a day-to-day basis.
Nick, you talked about, I think it was after night one, that you know, there were some things that happened in the draft that you expected that maybe the public at large or the mock drafts weren't predicting. Was there anything about the draft this year that was kind of a surprise to you, various position groups or anything that went way maybe higher or lower than you expected?
I wouldn't say big surprise, Seth. I think more than anything, sometimes, and we've talked about this, I mean, mock draft, I mean, you guys know how I feel about mock drafts and, you know, post-draft grades and all that other nonsense. But really, the mock drafts are about positioning where a player potentially is going to fall relative to a range. I would say in some cases, they were really out of whack. And then all of a sudden, you have this like mad dash 2 to 3 days before. Well, all of a sudden, this guy's like moving up the board or his positioning has changed. And we actually kind of anticipated, I'd say, the first 10 to 15 coming off, not coming off exactly the way that they came off, but having some understanding of the group of players that we expected. So, and then again, as the draft go, as you work yourself through the draft, so players come off, it's really a case by case, and it's very team specific. And then players are taken, you know, they're drafting players and taking the players that they covet, that they want to add to their team. And eventually it's going to kind of thin itself out, and then you're drafting like a different level of players. So we've talked about this. I've talked about this just relative to a range of players or grouping of players at a certain level and where they kind of fall on the board, where they fit relative to their grade. So not necessarily anything surprising. I mean, we try not to get too caught up in the ebbs and flows of the draft. I think we try to maintain as much flexibility, adaptability, and it's very fluid. Understanding players are going to come off. There's going to be certain players. If you have three or four, you might lose all three. When if you lose them, what's the next alternative? And you just kind of keep it moving. So try not to get too high. Try not to get too low. adapt to the circumstances as you go. And, you know, we felt that that's kind of the how those 3 days went.
Is there a part of that, though, too, where, okay, you know, you said you felt like you had a pretty good feel for the top 15, and obviously there's players that we've talked about a lot that went in the top 15. Is there a part of you where before the draft and you're trying to monitor kind of what all the scuttlebutt is that you're like, all right, well, we think this guy should go in the top 15, but there looks like there might be a chance he doesn't go? Is there a little bit of extra eyebrow raised on some of those guys?
You're always prepared, so... Again, you don't know exactly how it's going to go for anybody, for me or anybody to sit here and tell you, like, okay, this is exactly how it's going to go. I mean, they'd be lying to you. So it's just more having an understanding of the players, having an understanding of the value, just having a general understanding of the ballpark of where they're going to situate and fall. And if the player's there at a certain level, you feel comfortable with him, you take him. If you don't, then if he's not there, then you move on to the next cohort of players. So with
Tyler Booker, and now we don't even have to talk about, you know, whether you guys like Tyler Booker or anything. And I don't, you know, now that he's a player on another team, however much you're allowed to talk about him, like, he's a guy that was, you know, for a long time, people were saying, oh, look at this guy, he's going to be a mid first round pick. Then he has a poor combine performance. At what point with a player like that, obviously the Cowboys, who have drafted really well in general over the past several years, like, is there a point where you just say, all right, like the film is the film and we've watched him do it for a while, and we just, do you throw the combine results completely out and just stand on your evaluation?
Yeah, you know this, Seth, between February and the draft, like, what actually happens that changes a player's quote unquote value or statue, other than everybody's talking about it, everybody's got an opinion, and then they kind of get shuffled around. So at times there's a lot of noise, which you have to be somewhat disciplined to block out the noise. How the player performs, any player, how a player performs and he plays and his body of work, that's going to be the bulk of the assessment. So you have the physical evaluation of the player, what they do on the field. Really, a player is not going to move up or down the board because of a 15-minute combine interview or, you know, a 2-minute combine workout, at least from our perspective. Other teams may feel differently, and there's 32 different teams, and they go about it however they feel appropriate. So focus on the player, focus on their performance, focus on their production. What are some of the things that they do well? What are some of the areas they can improve? If a player has a deficiency, can we improve that? If the player does have a deficiency, then it goes back to their mindset. Do they have the desire to get better? Do they want to take coaching? Do they want to improve? Are they focused on football? Or are they focused on a lot of other things that really don't matter? So, again, you have to be careful not to let one particular thing outside of the film sway your decision. You evaluate the players. You grade the players. You gather information. You assign a grade. You go back and forth. At some point, whenever that is, when you kind of put the player to bed, you're comfortable with what you think the profile of the player is, and then you move on to the next group of players that we have to find out more information on. Maybe they have something outstanding. Maybe they have a personal situation that has some extenuating circumstances that could affect some things. Those are the things that you try to focus on. The combine's the combine. The testing's the testing. Everybody gets a data point. Okay, the guy ran fast. All right, great. He ran slow. Okay, he didn't jump high enough. Again, how do you weigh that in your overall, I would say, evaluation process? Some have more weight than others. Again, it all goes back to, like, what's your philosophy? What do you believe in? What do you prioritize? And then ultimately, that's what drives you to your end decision.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us here on Payne and Pendergast. Nick, just another thing on the draft, but a specific thing with the move you guys made to move out of the first round. People make a big deal out of, okay, these are the extra picks they got for moving back. You get the two extra threes. How important was it for you to not move too far back, though? I mean, we saw a trade right after you at the 26th pick between the Rams and the Falcons, where the Rams moved down into the 40 somewhere, but they pick up an extra first. How important was it for you with that specific deal to not move too far back, because you end up getting Jaden Higgins in that deal?
Yeah, Sean, that's a good point. I think you have to be careful of whenever you move out of a pick. A, how far back are you going? And then B, it's a product of what are you looking at on the board? So at some point, you're going to lose X number of players. So either A, you have to be comfortable with that, or B, if you do move back off of, let's call it 15 to 20 picks, do you have the ability to get into a spot maybe move up 5 or 10 spots to get back in a range that can give you an opportunity to maybe pick a group of players that you otherwise would lose out on. I would say an example of that was, so we moved off of 25, went to 34, which we felt was a reasonable spot. It wasn't quite as far as we moved last year when we did the trade with Minnesota, which was done before the draft, when we moved kind of in the mid to low, I think it was 22. We ended up going back to 42. So, all right, there's 15 to 20 players. And I would say, you know, last year going back on that, like, we were comfortable in the 40s. Could we have moved up a little bit? Sure. I think we tried to move up a little bit, but in the end, we ended up picking Kamari, who we were probably going to pick anyways. So sometimes it kind of works itself out. I would say even in this draft, so when you look at, so we move off of 25, go to 34. We felt we were going to pick at 34, and then we were able to kind of get a little flexibility, the extra third. But we did have a little bit of a gap from 34 to whatever it was, 65, or whatever that pick was in the third round. Mm-hmm. So then as we were evaluating it, we had acquired that extra third-round pick with the Giants trade, and then we were able to move kind of in that 48, 49, 50 range, kind of that mid-second-round range, because we felt that was probably a decent range where we could get a player, like, as an example, Ursary. And then in the third round, so then you pick, all right, then you have a gap. If you pick the 34, then your next pick is in the 60s or 70s. It's 25, 30 players, so how many players are going to lose? What's the next sort of break point? So there, that just goes back to, there's an ebb and flow of the draft. So you make a trade, you know where you're positioned. Then it's, you flip the page to what's the next move?
Yeah.
Do you want to move back in? Do you want to move up? Are we comfortable sitting where we are? If we sit, here's what's going to happen. Which I would say, not to get too far ahead here, but I would say that was part of the rationale with the Woody Marks pick. Once we picked on Friday, we didn't have a fourth or fifth round pick, and there was a certain group of players, I would say, that we had graded, and the likelihood of them probably making it to the sixth round or wherever our first pick was in the sixth, more than likely was not going to happen. So we had discussions, said, look, we have an opportunity to go back into the fourth round to get to a certain level. Is it worth doing? And then once we made a decision it was worth doing, then we gave up the future third, which we'd acquired from the Giants trade. The couple days earlier, which a future third is really present value of a fourth. So then you're asking yourself, would we pick this player in the fourth round of this year's draft? And I think the answer was yes. So that's why we were ended up making the trade to move back into the fourth round and then pick Woody. So just goes, that's the ebb and flow of the draft. Yeah. And you guys have followed us enough to know we'll pretty much do anything. We're open-minded and things move pretty quickly, and you just, if you know the players, you know the board kind of top to bottom, if you have some conviction, then you go ahead and make the decision and then make, you know, pick the player and then move on to the next opportunity, whatever that is.
You said after the first night of the draft, someone asked you in that press conference if there was still a player on the board that you were considering at 25. Is there still somebody there after the first round that you were considering at 25 when you made that trade? Is it fair to assume that Jaden Higgins was the one player that you volunteered there, that you cited that, yeah, there was one guy?
There were some players, I think, that we probably would have picked in the first round. So Seth Payne was probably one of those players as well.
That's
so
right.
If he were on the board, we had his card up there pretty high. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'd say Jaden was a Jaden was a player that
back
we liked
in time, I know. Yeah.
Pretty consistently throughout the process. Yeah. So. But there were certain players that we would have felt comfortable taking at 25 or at some point in the first round and vice versa in the second round as well.
Yeah.
Nick, I'm sorry. I was just thinking
about
my
draft. I know, he's flustered now.
I got a flashback to my draft. No, I was going to tell you. No, Nick, I've told you many times of like various ways that I screwed up the draft process. But the dumbest thing I ever did was when I was visiting Jacksonville, they told me they really liked Rinaldo Wynn. And I knew Rinaldo.
Defensive,
you know. And there's like, hey, we really like him, but you know, if we don't get him, we'll go. You know, we might take him in the first round. If we don't like him, if he's not there, then you know, we might go ahead and take you. In my dumb mind as a kid, I thought that they were telling me they were going to draft me in the first round. If Rinaldo Wynn wasn't there.
That's how I would have heard it.
Yeah. Luckily, my agent was very,
that would be
smart.
My interpretation as well. Yeah. That's what they said to me.
Basically, what they meant was, and they ended up drafting Rinaldo in the first round. They drafted me in the fourth round. I was very insulted.
You were close.
Yeah. No, my agent, Ralph Sindrich, set me straight. He's like, no.
I like Ralph. Person. Ralph's a good agent.
That's great.
You ain't no first-round pick, son.
All right, Nick, I got to ask you this. What was your reaction of all the draft picks that you know, you pick up the phone and you call, when you call Jalen Reed in the sixth round and you're just getting hit with a barrage of this right here, like this, and again, Ben, hit it again, and again, and again, and again. Were you hearing him scream, let's do it, that whole time, or were you just, that was a wild phone call.
Yeah, no, I was trying to just introduce him, hey, excited to have you here, and I couldn't talk, so kind of let him have his day in the limelight. He was excited, so at least he didn't say, let's effing go, and then we had that recorded. And so, then we would have had a bigger issue.
Yeah,
but,
social media so. Teams like, ah, yeah.
A lot of energy, very excited, and that's kind of his personality. That's how he plays. But that was a fun, that was a fun moment.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. Texans GM Nick Caserio joining us here on the program this morning. All right, Nick. So circling back to the current group of guys, and obviously a lot of change on the offensive line, a lot of churn there. When it comes to Tytus Howard, do we know yet, is he going to be playing tackle or guard? And is that a decision that needs to be made before heading into training camp? Or is that something you can actually kind of mix and match? I mean, those are two very different positions, obviously. Where are we at with that with Tytus right now?
Yeah, I think you have to look at each case individually. And in the spring is different than training camp, you know, when you're actually on the field. So I think the spring is an opportunity, whatever you're going to do, whether it's something schematically, whether it's something personnel-wise to give them an opportunity, maybe experiment with something a little bit different. I would say specific to Tytus, that's an example of a player that he's actually shown that he can play at a good level at either spot. So there is sort of an innate level of versatility. I think sometimes that term is used a little, I would say not carelessly or freely, but that the assumption is a player just has position versatility because of A, certain measurables, or B, should be able to do it. But if you've actually never seen him do it, it's hard to make that extrapolation and to make that assessment. And you're really not going to know with that player until you actually get into training camp, because it's a little bit of a dynamic. But I would say in our situation, we feel like we have a number of players that will be able to compete in the offensive line. And we have certain levels of players or certain grouping of players. You have sort of tackle-only group. You have tackles that can play guard. And I would say in Tytus's case, he's proven that he can do that. On the inside part of the line, you have players that are center-only. You have players that are guard-only. You have players that can play all three inside spots. So what we're trying to do is build up as much depth and versatility, like legit versatility, not just – on a piece of paper, you're going to pencil something in, this guy can do multiple things. Well, A, if you've never seen him do it, it's hard to make that assessment. But then B, if you do give him the opportunity, maybe you'll have a little bit more information so that if you are forced to move some players around, then you have a little bit more of a comfort level. So we're sort of in the infantile stages. Yesterday was the first day on the field of actually individualized work. And then once we transition to phase three, when we practice, we'll have different, you know, I would say combinations of players, and the same thing in training camp, all to arrive sort of at the same end point. Who are the five best guys that we feel most comfortable with? We're going to have eight players at the game more than likely. So you're going to have your five starters and then your three backups. You're going to have a next tackle. You're going to have a next inside player. And then you're going to have an extra player. And then what do you do if you lose a tackle? Who goes to that spot? Do you put the third tackle in the game? Do you move somebody from a different position? So there's different but similar to draft, there's going to be a little bit of an ebb and flow here, and we'll get more information here as we work through the process.
Yeah, and that's another thing with the modern CBA or the current CBA. There's just not as much practice time. There's not as much practice time in pads as there used to be. If you take a guy like Ariante Ursary, who's only played left tackle in college, and you know, you get him into camp, like at what point do you feel comfortable in camp thinking, all right, well, this guy might be able to handle this without really being able to see him do that much work in pads? Like how do you make that leap from having a guy play just tackle or just left tackle to, okay, we're playing him left and right tackle, or, oh, hey, we might try him out at guard?
Yeah, you got to be careful with that, Seth. I think the first 2-3 weeks, you should have an understanding of, A, how it's going and whatever position that player is playing. I think one of the things you always have to be conscious of, you never want to put the player in a position that's not favorable to him. If you're asking a player to do something that he's never done before, where's that sort of line of demarcation of when you, A, introduce it, and then, B, how much work can you actually get done? let's say going back to, you know, my experience in New England, you know, we drafted Solder, you know, as the third tackle. It was trying to figure out. We had Light. And I think we had Sebastian Vollmer there as well, Houston Cougar. And it's like, all right, what do you do with Solder? You just try to fit him inside? Well, maybe that's not the best thing. I think he was like the jumbo tight end. And, you know, we went to kind of heavy personnel grouping and eventually he transitioned. You know, Light was another player when he was drafted. You know, he was a little bit undersized relative to tackle. So Bill, they moved him to right tackle, tried him inside. It wasn't really good at any of those spots. His best position ended up being left tackle. You know, Matt had a really good career, 10, 11-year career at left tackle. So you have to take the player. It's always case by case. Some can handle a little bit more than others, but you just want to make sure you're not putting the player in a position that's not favorable to them, where they really can't accentuate their strengths and do what they do well. So I would say in Tay's case, and D'Amico mentioned this the other day, Tay's a tackle, really, until he's not. So I think the focus initially will be on tackle, and then we'll see kind of how we mix and match the rest of the group. Could that change? Possibly. I think the one thing you always have to be prepared for is just about anything. So sometimes you're forced to maybe make some decisions because you injuries or whatever else happens around you. But you want to be smart, and you want to make sure you're making a good decision on behalf of the player.
You know, with Ursary, I came around on Ursary because of John Harris specifically. And it was because the first time I watched Ursary, I'm like, man, he's really tall, and he doesn't, like, in my opinion, he didn't play with great knee bend. And I just didn't know about him. And then I talked to John Harris, and I read some of the stuff he wrote, and he was talking about his athleticism. So I went back and watched him again. And I realized, like, oh, yeah, he gets from point A to point B. He's doing a lot of really athletic stuff really, really well. And then when you guys drafted him, Daniel Jeremiah said, hey, some teams love him and look at him as a late first-round pick. Some other teams look at him as a third-round pick. Is part of that just simply because he's deceptively athletic? Like, he just, I think, are there some people that look at a guy like Ursary and think, like, oh, okay, no, that guy's just not, like, the type of, he's not a Laramie Tunsil type of fluid mover. And they're turned off by that versus other people that just look at it and say, yeah, but he gets the job done.
All offensive linemen, Chester's probably going to come in this office and strangle me. But again, athleticism and offensive linemen, how you define that, I think
fluidity.
It's different. But
yeah.
I'd say a couple things you want to focus on. A, can they play on their feet? Do they have a certain degree of bend? Do they have the ability to move laterally and kind of stay in front of rushers regardless of the position? So not how fast do they run from point A to point B. Like, that's, like, it's important, but it's really not, unless you're going to run some G scheme or crack scheme where they're pulling around. You get to see the guy run. But that didn't really happen a lot. And I would say in Ursary's case, I mean, here's a guy, how big he is, 6'5", 330, whatever he is. I mean, he actually ran 5 flat, which is like a decent time for an offensive lineman from point A to point B. But it's about, you're talking about functional athleticism as it pertains to, it's, everything's in a short space. So can you move laterally enough to stay in front and pass protection? And then really what you're looking for, their capacity to redirect. You know, if there's an outside rush and they cross face them or they rip inside and then you got to get back to your inside hand, the ability to kind of stick your foot in the ground and react. So maybe if you're lacking a little bit of, I would say, lower body flexibility, maybe you're able to compensate that because you have a certain level of playing strength if you punch with your inside hand. So there's different ways to kind of evaluate that. But I say the big thing is, do they play on their feet? Do they stay in front of the defender? And then in a running game, their ability to move or displace people at the line of scrimmage, are they able to roll their hips on contact? So it's always going to be a little bit different. Sometimes beauty's in the eye of the beholder a little bit. I would say Laramie is kind of like, he's his own category. You have him, Trent Williams, like that level of athlete is pretty rare. So then you kind of take those players out of it. Then you're looking for a functional level of movement. And in the end, can you get the guy in front of you blocked? Like, that's the most important thing.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us on the program. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 Houston, an Odyssey sports station.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.